not. Siri sent the agenda out. Again, thanks to everyone for taking the time out. And I know she also sent the minutes out, so I would entertain a motion to approve the minutes if there's no additions or changes. A motion, please.
Motion to approve.
Who was that, please?
Clark.
Okay. Oh, my spelling. All right.
I'm trying to be on two calls here at the same time, but I'm gonna keep muting you back and forth though.
All right. Is there a second? Amber, can I have a second?
I'll second.
All in favor? Signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, likewise. Thank you. All right. So, next, and Clark, I'm like you. Our mayor is on TV now, and I'm trying to listen with one ear. Is he going to release us or not? Or if I'm still confined in my house. All right. On the needs assessment. Thank you for those who helped with the needs assessments. I truly, truly appreciate it. I'll give you a summary of what we actually turned in, okay? So one of them was to establish a crisis stabilization unit in Region 5. Who filled this one out on the, are they on the line?
I did.
Okay. Amber, you want to, is that Amber?
Yeah, it is.
All right. Can you briefly go over with them what we turned in?
Yeah. So this is really similar to what we presented last year. We presented that we are the only region in the state that does not have a crisis stabilization unit. And so this was just a proposal that was really similar to what we sent in last year, just with some updated data and statistics.
Okay. And I think it's a, I always think it's a good point because I have, I jokingly say I have clients all the time that can meet, could use a CSU. So, and it's Youth Villages on the phone. Because the next one dealt with expanding school-based services for families and youth that encompasses prevention, education, and support regardless of ability to pay or insurance status. Now, isn't there something going through the department right now about school-based something?
There's a school being, it'll be part of my update, actually.
Okay. All right. We'll wait then.
Okay.
All right. Those were the two that went in for mental health. For substance abuse, it was turned in the need for increased funding for MMWM services, and that's medically monitored withdrawal management services. To the indigent, for increasing the number of beds, offsetting the cost of treating clients with greater needs, and offsetting the cost of running a 24/7 clinic that employs a prescriber and a nurse practitioner. And what happened in this one is the state back in 2010 was very forthcoming with the need for detox to try to reduce unnecessary admissions to the institute, to the ER, to make it available to the mobile crisis teams and law enforcement. It took off, and I think it probably took off a little better than they had intended on it with the available funding. However, over the last few years, we have definitely, through the state's effort, has increase access points through the ropes, through the lifeliners, through the faith-based recovery congregation, the recovery corps, the navigators. They are now all making referrals into the MMWM. And there are beds out there. There is just no funding for those beds. And so that was what the focus of that was. We did give some data that was, I think all these were initially sent to you guys for a vote. That one did get modified because I had two things in it and Kirby wouldn't let me do that. So I had to change it. The second one that was put in was increased funding for MAT programs in Region 5 to offset the cost of complying with the drug enforcement regulations. Here, probably in the last 6 months, it was pointed out that while telehealth, the DEA is okay with telehealth, they want two prescribers in the room. They want a nurse practitioner or a PA, somebody with a DEA number to be in the room with the X waiver, with the client when they're doing a face-to-face with an X waiver doctor, the doctor who's actually going to be prescribing the buprenorphine. And this cost, and I gave them cost information, it went up more than double the cost to deliver MAT services. So those were the two needs assessments that went, the four that went in for our region. Kirby said, okay, if I forward the summary that you did a great job of summarizing it. Or do I need to hold the summary until?
No, that's what I'm going to be submitting.
Okay. All right. So that's what we turned in. Now, is there any question on those?
Yeah, I think Allison is with Youth Villages is on the line. She might want to talk about that second one.
Okay. Allison, are you on the line?
Yes, I am on the line.
Is there anything else you want to add about the expanded school-based one?
I don't have anything to add at this point. I think Tasha might be on the line. She was having a couple of phone difficulties, but she was the one that had a little bit more input within writing that proposal. So I don't have anything in addition at this time to add to that.
At Encompass, I think groups as well for school-age children, access to groups within the school day, and we talked about ACEs within that too, because that was an important component that someone had discussed and the group had agreed that that needed to be in there. So we put all of that in there, and it also targeted education to parents of preschool age as well. That was wrapped into the ACEs piece so that we could get the lifespan in there. That was the only thing in addition.
I appreciate the work that you ladies did and Amber did to help getting these out. So thank you very much.
Sure.
All right. And I'll confer to Kirby and them. These summaries now go to the executive committee. Is that right?
No, the needs will go through department leadership just to review, and then they'll go to the commissioner.
Okay.
And who's that department leadership? Sorry, Kirby, it's Kimberly.
Yeah, so it just goes through a review process just to make sure there's, you know, like grammar and make sure that, like, clarification on data, stuff like that, in case we have to ask any more questions, and then it'll go to the commissioner. And then ultimately, once approved by the commissioner, it's shared with the department or the divisions and offices within the department to help with the three-year plan.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Next steps on the agenda is the discussion of the legislative proposal request. I will confess that one slipped up. Right in the middle. I actually thought it was June, but it slipped up, and just didn't get done. So I'll take responsibility for that.
Debbie, you're not alone.
Okay.
You're not alone. It always is you.
Committee, Debbie?
Ma'am?
Sorry, it's Kimberly again. That's what I was going to say. You're not alone. Is it usually like a committee of people that work on these?
Yeah. Wasn't the original date June 1?
Yeah, every year it's June 1st, but this year the governor's office informed us in March that the deadline would move to May 1st. So we were informed too. Mm-hmm.
Well, and for us, that fell between two meetings.
Right. It's the same for every regional council. The same thing happened.
And so that was hard. Is that going to be the schedule for next year as well?
We have no idea. We don't know. But, yeah, that was presented to us, too, in March. And we were just like, well.
Well, unfortunately, we did not submit one. And I'll let the state talk about that. I know I got a chair call at 1:30 today on the legislative proposals. But I'll let the state talk about anything they can talk about that up to this point in their report. What I'd like to talk about is how is everyone doing and the impact that COVID is having on delivering services out in Region 5. I'll start so everybody can be thinking a little bit. Right off the bat, I had two employees at the same site test positive for COVID. And that set a whole lot of panic in place. Luckily, and this was up in Clarksville, luckily we had already started transitioning to telehealth and had about a week where we had already separated the clients from the staff. I will say that the department and TEMA were very helpful and especially Melvin in his process of getting us some PPEs immediately because of that staff had been exposed. It's been a lot dealing with the staff's emotions. I've had staff that I had to talk off the ledge. That was just the sky was falling. But I will I will tell you that they stepped up to the plate. We lost some clients through the telehealth process, but those that stayed with us, it's been working well. I think the other big thing has been just trying to find the PPE for our staff to make sure our staff was, we did not stop delivering services at all. We kept taking admissions, still taking admissions, but it has made us go back and rethink how we do business. We've had to go back and look at universal precautions. We've had to write some extra policies, and we've had to overcome some barriers. But services continued. We did see the referrals go down. And are still lower than what they typically are this year. So I'll let others speak now to how it's impacted them.
I'll go. I'm from Mental Health Co-op. We have continued services, of course, according to the new guidelines. So therapy, clinic, and everything is over the phone. Case managers We're all working from home, but we're still able to make contact with all our consumers. So speaking in a general standpoint, we have continued everything. So all of our patients are complying to the most part and receiving the services that they had in person.
Could you tell me who that was, and when you speak, could you just let me know who it is so I can get it down correctly for the minutes? I apologize.
No, I apologize. I'm Adrienne Doak from Mental Health Co-op.
Thank you.
Well, this is Clark from the VA. As far as the homeless program is concerned, it's really, for the first couple of weeks, it was real bad because, you know, we deal mostly face-to-face with all of our veterans, and based on the fact that some of them don't have the telephones and stuff like that for us to do the assessments and get everything in. But as time went by, a lot of them, as time went by, it got better. That's all I can say as far as that, because a lot of our work is done, you know, just face-to-face contact and with groups and with meetings. But since we got the Zoom process going now and everything, and it opened up a lot better. Now, as far as the courts are, all of the courts are Zoom operated now. So as time goes, it gets better. It slowed us down a lot, but we're coming along. That's all I can say. We're coming along. The process is real slow, but it's getting better.
I will say that it's the department has been very gracious with their time, and that they have a call 3 times a week with us. Initially, it was every day. So they were there trying to hold our hands, trying to walk through it with us, allowing us opportunities to ask questions and help find answers. And that has been a tremendous help. We still are meeting 3 times a week. Just to make sure the correct information is being disseminated out to everyone. The department did adjust the group times and gave us some leeway because, you know, it's hard if you're doing an IOP session with somebody. An IOP by licensure says you got to have 90 minutes. I'm sorry, you got to have 3 hours. It's kind of hard to, you know, after about an hour on the phone, you've lost my concentration. And so it was even worse with them that they allowed us to do group for the hour. And then, but we had to clearly document that they were getting other stuff to fill up the other 2 hours. So that was a big help on our end, delivering services for clients.
Yeah.
Hey, Debbie, just to reiterate some of the resources that are out there from the department for providers and licensees. If you go on our website and click the banner that talks about
Mustard
departmental
yellow.
COVID. Yeah, is it yellow? Yeah, the yellow banner. It talks about the department's response to COVID-19. But on that web page that it takes you to, there's all types of resources. There's frequently asked questions from those provider calls. There's information from 10Care, from documents and guidance that they've put out. So we've tried to combine all that stuff in one easy to find place. And myself, Avis, Kirby, Amy, we're always happy to help direct you to the appropriate link if that's needed. So thanks to everyone for hanging in there. No, it's not been the most ideal situation, but I think Clark's right. A lot of it's kind of like these conference calls we've been having via WebEx that maybe at first they start off a little rough because people are trying to mute their phones and check in. But by the time they get going, it winds up being a pretty good meeting. And I think y'all should be commended for sticking with some of the rough patches at first and continuing to provide services to some vulnerable Tennesseans. So thank you.
No, I think it's going to be interesting. I was just talking with my Clarksville site via conferencing before I came on this call. And they're wanting to talk with me about what this is going to look like going forward. You know, how do you plan for something that's unknown? And how far do you take it? You know, we immediately went to, we've had some versions of different kinds of way of doing business at all my sites. So between Clarksville, Nashville, Castalian Springs, Lewisburg, and Hornwall, and none of them doing it the same way, but because each site is totally different. And with the talk about it going to hit again in the fall and the winter, you know, what kind of hybrid are we looking at delivering treatment? What is treatment, both on the mental health side and on the substance abuse side? What's that going to look like in the future? We've been having that with leadership discussion. And as a provider, I can tell you that it's somewhat a little scary.
Yeah.
About what that might look like going forward. Some of us, y'all have heard me reference myself as a crusty old counselor because I've been doing it for 30 plus years. And I'm pretty apt to adapting to new stuff, but and probably the first one out of the box to do something that's not normal. But it's still scary at trying to figure out how do we as agencies prop ourselves up to provide services, which then means you got to have the staff and you got to have the money in order to provide the services, quality services. And then what does that delivery of services actually look like to the client? You know, most people think that the only way to get treatment is in 28 days. Well, I'm a licensed counselor, and I don't necessarily buy that theory. There's other ways to do it and longer engagement and all that. Y'all have heard that. But I think sometimes it's still in the individual's mind that that's the way it's supposed to look like, and they have a lot of trouble even themselves when treatment doesn't look like the way they think it should be. So the unknown moving forward are the exceptions that the department has given us, that the DEA has given us. Are those exceptions going to continue? We've made them work. So why wouldn't they continue? So there's just a lot of uneasiness in running an operation trying to figure out what's going on. I don't know if any other agency has those concerns, but that's our biggest concern at trying to figure it out so that we can continue to be available for those who suffer from addiction and co-occurring.
Hey, Debbie, this is Kurt. I hear you. I think that those are all valid questions. And, you know, a lot of life is about not knowing what's in store the next minute, the next hour, the next day, and adapting. So I'm sure that as we move out of this time, hopefully very soon, we'll all grapple with those types of questions and trying to decide, well, just because we made it work, does that mean it's ideal? Just because it's ideal, does that mean we can make it work? Will be the themes for the after time, and we'll deal with it like we've always dealt with it together and in a thorough data-driven way.
Yeah. Any other agencies got anything that you want to go ahead.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. This is Allison Parker with Youth Villages. I was just going to give a couple updates for us, if that's okay.
Yes.
Okay. So since the beginning, it's kind of evolved. So we have definitely increased our use of telehealth. We were doing a lot of telehealth for our crisis assessments previously, and so that has definitely increased across the board. We've been able to work well with various facilities to continue to improve that ability to complete telehealth assessments and crisis assessments in that way in facilities we weren't able to do that with prior. So that has been positive. We have seen our call volume compared to, 2019 in April was down. However, the acuity seems to be higher in the youth that we are seeing. We have been able to thankfully work very well with other resources in the community to get the youth that we are seeing mental health services and also into inpatient facilities as needed. So that has been really helpful. If that was one of the concerns in the beginning is, are we going to be able to refer these kids to outpatient resources and operate that way? And so that has been working well and being able to have them access services. As far as Youth Villages and our community-based services, we're still taking new referrals, still seeing youth. We're utilizing telehealth in those, but also going out in the community based on the advice protocols and keeping safe distances and those things. So across the board, I think, we have changed and evolved in the way that we're operating, but just kind of expanded what we were already doing and reevaluating as we go. Based on the feedback that I have heard from my team in the South Middle area and then across the state is, the switch to telehealth has worked well as we're, operating and during a pandemic and an unprecedented time and, really trying to keep our assessments in the community to avoid that potential exposure to, other things that might happen in an emergency department as much as possible also.
I think that we certainly, this is Tasha, by the way, from Youth Villages, we certainly share in the uncertainty and not knowing what to expect from week to week and what it's going to look like for our staff and delivery of services. And so, and even are we ever going to go back to normal? Is there going to be a new normal with the remote kind of distance digital service delivery? So sometimes it helps just to know you're not alone and we're all kind of muddling through it as we go. And that's kind of where we're at as well. And I know our staff feel that too.
It is, and it is good to know that we're not alone. And I always appreciate Governor Lee's comments. He always referenced that, we're not alone. And that helps tremendously. Any others got any comments?
Hey, this is Amber with Mental Health America. We have gotten some feedback from folks because with the whole telehealth thing, there have been some exceptions that have been made to like pre-licensed counselors or counselors that are working towards being licensed have been allowed to do some telehealth services. I know that there's a lot of folks that now that they're doing it are saying that this has been something that's been really beneficial and that they're hoping that that's something that can continue as long as folks are still continuing supervision and that type of thing. Because it's providing another route for people that otherwise wouldn't be able to get out to access services. So just wanted to throw that out there as something that we were hearing.
One of the barriers, I think, if we look at this current norm going forward, and it's been something we've had to try to figure out how to do. Most of us all have phones that have huge amount of data, not unlimited data capability, but a lot of their phones don't have that.
Right.
And that's been a major, major barrier, even when we've had them grouped in houses, because we do IOP or OP with our MAC clients, and they live in various forms of our housing scattered across the city. I can't put telehealth capabilities in all those houses. And so being able to even work with them, getting them okay to use some of their data to correspond in a group, that I think has been one of the biggest barriers, is their ability to have the data access to participate in telehealth services.
Right.
I'm glad you said that again, because Clark, I wanted to ask you, you said at the beginning you had a hard time with that, with your homeless population. Were you able to pick a place where they all came and you had technology for them to talk?
No, we were. That was one thing that we were looking at, but we just wasn't able to be able to find, you know, we wasn't able to do that, because that would require them being, you know, with the social distancing and all that going on. We just wasn't able to do that, but it's hard, you know, it's hard. But most of them, we can get. I have got to a point where I can get like three or more, and my boss allowed me to do that. Not often, but three or more, probably four at the most. And I get one room at the VA, where I could meet with them, but then that was a matter of them getting transportation over there, because I could not transport, you know. So it's to answer your question, no, we tried that at one time, but that did not work. You know, as far as find a place where we can meet, you know, it just couldn't work, because if I would have to go pick them up, or they would have to get there on their own, and it did not work like that. But now some of the social workers will even go and keeping the 6-foot distance, would just have like a 10 or 15 minute session with them on their porch, or, you know, something like that. So
and when you look at our region does not have, and like most of the rural regions in the Tennessee,
right.
Doesn't have mass transit, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of the development districts have funded, like the South Central or Mid-Cumberland Human Resource Agencies, they have vans, but it's not always, they're not always available. And quite honestly, they don't like picking up our clients.
Exactly.
And so dealing with it from, you know, I'll always be a rural advocate person. But I do want to say on the rural health piece, we were blessed. The department called and said, hey, we want to do something out of the box. You want to do it? They always know my answer is, if it's out of the box, sign me up. I don't like boxes, so I do anything outside of a box. The state wrote Helen Ross McNabb, Buffalo Valley, and the state submitted a grant to SAMHSA, and it was funded. And I can tell you that with that, we will be purchasing a mobile health clinic bus. Five counties that will be targeted in our region, if I get them right here, and y'all may have to correct me, is Lewis, Perry, Wayne, Lawrence, and Marshall. So and Helen Ross has five rural counties up in their area. And this is to address rural health and behavioral health issues. These vans will go to those cities one day a week, and they will be equipped with a nurse practitioner, nurse, and either LCSW or LPC to look at behavioral health issues, but to address physical health issues. So we're taking the clinic to them. The clinic, that mobile clinic, will be in that town one time a week to provide physical health as well as make sure the behavioral health services get where they need to be to get the services. So we're really excited about this. It addresses some rural health issues. Yay.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Very exciting. That's great news.
Yeah, we don't know what we're doing, but we're going to figure it out.
Yeah.
Anything else as it relates to COVID-19? If not, I'm going to go to Kirby. Kirby, you want to give us updates?
Well, Debbie, you took some of my update.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
That's okay. No, you provided way more detail than I could have because you're the one actually doing it. So I appreciate you doing that. Okay, so I have my department update. Sherry, I'll email this to you like I usually do just for your minutes, okay?
Thank you.
You're welcome. The first update, February report, three-year plan, year one, FY 2020. Has been completed and shared with regional council leadership. If you're interested in viewing this document, please contact your regional chair or vice chair to view it. So I have quite a few updates in here that don't really pertain to Region 5, but I want you all to just be aware of what's going on throughout the state as far as it goes with the department. This is one of them. The Division of Mental Health Services is seeking proposals from department-contracted crisis service providers to operate a CSU and a crisis walk-in center. The successful proposer will serve adults aged 18 or older who are experiencing a behavioral health crisis while physically located in Regions 1 or 2. The CSU walk-in center must be physically located in one of the following counties: Anderson, Campbell, Claiborne, Cox, Granger, Hamblin, Hancock, Hawkins, Jefferson, or Union. The continuum is not intended to duplicate services currently provided in these counties. The deadline for these proposals is actually today. The department is, let me see. I think I have this one. This is what Debbie already talked about. The department's receiving $10 million in federal grant money to take behavioral services to the rural Tennesseans who need them the most. The funding will be spread over 5 years and will fund a pair of mobile health clinics to address the behavioral health and physical health needs of residents in 10 rural Tennessee counties. The counties served by the mobile health clinics are clustered in Middle Tennessee, Lawrence, Lewis, Marshall, Perry, and Wayne counties, and in East Tennessee, Claiborne, Cox, Granger, Hancock, and Jefferson counties. The counties were chosen based on distress status and need for services. The department will be doing this work in partnership with Buffalo Valley and Helen Ross McNabb Center. Once fully implemented, the goal of the program is to serve about 2,000 Tennesseans at about 4,800 clinic visits per year. The department is proud to add 5 new Lifeline peer project coordinators in rural and distressed areas of the state. The new Lifeliners will be based in Cock, Grundy, Lauderdale, McNary, and Scott counties. The department is also excited to announce the expansion of a successful program to divert individuals from jail into mental health treatment services. Pathways Behavioral Health, Volunteer Behavioral Health Care System, and Morgan County Government have been recommended for grants through the Pre-Arrest Diversion Infrastructure Capital Grants Program. The grant recommendations were made by the department in consultation with the Department of Finance and Administration and will be administered by the Department of General Services. After approval by the State Building Commission, each of the 3 grantees will receive $500,000 to to implement the program they designed for their community. Designs include for Pathways Behavioral Health, crisis services including a walk-in center and crisis stabilization unit located in Humboldt to connect clients to treatment and services for Gibson, Crockett, Dyer, Obion, Lake, Weekly, Benton, Carroll, and Hayward counties. For Volunteer Hiawassee Mental Health Center, crisis services will be expanded to include a 24/7 walk-in center with observation and respite services located in Cleveland to serve Bradley and surrounding counties. And Morgan County Government, in partnership with Ridgeview Behavioral Health, facility for co-located community services in Wartburg. Last but not least, the department is seeking proposals from community behavioral health agencies interested in providing school-based behavioral health liaisons in their community. The primary goal of the school-based behavioral health liaison program expansion is to provide recurring funds for up to 59 new school-based behavioral health liaison positions to assist elementary, middle, or high schools in implementing behavioral health services and support that improve outcomes for students with a social emotional disturbance or who are at risk of developing a mental health or substance use disorder. Proposals are due by June 1st, and more information can be found on the department website. I have the link included in my update that will be shared with Sherry. And that's what I have.
Aren't you full of good information? Kurt, do you have anything you want to add?
I don't. I think Kirby did a great job. Her and Avis and Amy did a good job of keeping y'all updated. The only update I guess I'll add is that we know that the legislature will be coming back on June 1st. I think they're actually going to be meeting in committee meetings the week before June 1st. That's my 2-year-old. She's playing a game. I think they'll be coming back for committees the last week of May going into June 1st. They're still trying to figure out how they're going to be meeting, but they will be taking up bills that they were not able to take up due to the truncated legislative session due to COVID-19 pandemic. And I imagine that they will also be taking a look at the 2021 budget again. So keep an eye out for that. Remain vigilant. Continue to advocate for those causes that you think are important. And we'll just see how this all sorts out, and we'll ride out the storm as best we can. But that's the only real update I have.
Kurt, the one thing that we hadn't really been talked about a whole lot. I know that Commissioner had a great budget going in. I know that the governor was adding to that budget. We understand that is going to be severely impacted because of COVID-19. Can any of you there at the state give us any indication of what you think that's going to look like going forward? Or do you even think what the legislators what's the future look for where the budget was to where it is now?
Yeah. I don't have a lot of information on what the legislature's thinking. I think it's important to realize they did pass the legislature before they left in March. They did pass a budget for FY21. In that budget, although it did not include all the money that we were projected to receive, there were still two really big ticket items that were included: the behavioral health, the school-based behavioral health liaison program expansion to every county was included in that budget, and the money for the children's behavioral health safety net was included in that budget that was passed in March. There were a lot of things that were left on the table for our department and for a lot of different departments. So what we are hoping to see is that they come in and take a conservative approach to the budget. However, they are working with a set of facts and with information that is troubling. I think anyone who's watching the news knows that state revenues are down. So they're going to have to take some action, I think, to make sure that we're in a good fiscal place. At this point, what I think our department and other departments and the advocates that work with us, all we can do at this point is continue to inform legislators and administration folks about the impacts that this is going to have, and just do the best we can. No one knows what the future holds. The last thing I'll say is, before they left in March, they adjusted the projections for growth all the way back down to 0%. So they were trying to be pretty conservative when they left in March, and we'll just see what course they think is wise going forward. But I'm praying that they have wisdom. I'm praying for them to have discernment when they come back in late May and June. And that's really what we can do, is that and continue to provide them, to provide the decision makers with information about the impacts we're seeing and the impacts that we know are going to come based on previous experience with the Great Recession in 2007, 8, and 9. And other experiences that we've had.
Thank you, Kurt. And you know, it's definitely, you know, we say it all the time, but until you really stop and hear some of it, and you actually hear it from some other people, it is a different world at this particular point in time. And it really does take a lot of thinking outside the box, a lot of staying faithful to what you believe, and reaching out to those who can impact. So thank you for that. Thank you guys at the state and all of you who are on the ground actually delivering the services. Avis, you've been quiet. Do you have anything to add?
No, Davey, I don't. I think, as Kurt said, Kirby did a good job keeping you all informed about what's going on across the state. And Kurt, you know, gave a wonderful update with the budget and where that is headed and some of those maybe expectations. But I don't have anything else. Keep doing what you're doing. Everybody's doing a wonderful job. I know it's difficult during these times. Remember, we are here. Kurt, Kirby, myself, and Amy are here to support you all with resources if you need it. Our website has it, as Kurt says. But anything we can help you with or help you do or help you as you try to schedule meetings or getting things done, we're asking you to do. As far as needs assessment proposals and things going forward, please let us know. We know this is a difficult time, and sometimes you need a little bit extra time because of what you have going on in your agencies. But we're flexible, and we're willing to work with you, and we just appreciate everything you're doing.
Thank you. I just want to open it up to anyone else that wants to add anything. What about our MCOs? Do y'all have any words of wisdom and guidance for us?
Well, Hi, this is Kudra from United Healthcare. There are some relaxations, I think, regarding the telehealth by TemCare. So I would advise all of you to go onto TemCare website and see the new rules and new guidelines. So they are helping a lot for telehealth so that, you know, you can use telehealth, but not necessarily with the old restrictions, so you can bill for them. I would advise everybody to go to TemCare website and read those.
Yeah. Hello, this is LaWanda with the Merit Group, and we appreciate everything that you guys are doing. We know that it's a difficult time, and as you do the telehealth, make sure that you continue to document as much as you can. But thanks for everything that you've done or that you're doing.
Coalitions. I know we got Murray County. We got somebody from Murray County and Cheatham County on the line.
Hey, is Laura still on? I don't know if Laura's still on. Is she on? I'll let her go first if she doesn't mind.
Okay, yes, I'm here. With coalitions, I mean, our options are a little more broad than with the treatment community. For instance, one thing that we observed during the shutdown, immediately restaurants could do takeout food and alcohol. And we had staff that personally observed IDs not being checked. People went in and bought one burrito and four margaritas, and, you know, in normal times, everybody has to show an ID, and there's some limits on that. So what we did was we developed a flyer with tips for the restaurant owners, reminding them to check ID. It's still the law, and also it can be difficult when people are wearing masks to, you know, match up their ID. So we did a mailing to county businesses that were serving food takeout with those tips. So we just try to, you know, roll with the changes and adapt where we can.
Do you find that effective, Laura?
Well, it's hard for us to personally go around, you know, and order the drinks. Our law enforcement has not had any instances, you know, where they're enforcing that or being called out for that. But it could be that they are, you know, everybody's consumed with their own keeping the infections out of their jail. And so we really don't have a lot of outcome for that. But, you know, at least it will remind the business owner. And, you know, ABC doesn't have time to go around now and do checks. So we just try to be a good community partner and at least remind them this is still the law.
Okay. That's awesome that you guys would do that.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that, Laura. This is Kimberly. I'll just jump in and say that this was a lot of chaos, but with it came a lot of opportunity to show up and support our community partners and talk about the impact of COVID-19 on substance use disorders and mental health, and talk about substance use disorders as mental health, opportunities to share data and stay connected, and shift learning options to online, and, you know, of course, meeting opportunities too. But it really did give us an opportunity to connect with community partners, and we were certainly grateful for that. And we'll probably continue to meet via Zoom and online, even when we do resume normal meetings, because it has been really well received.
Right.
So that's what I have.
Okay. Anything else? Announcements?
Hey, Miss Gabby, can you talk about membership for me?
Actually, you know what? I wrote that on my form up here and then just went right past it.
Could I make an announcement?
Yes.
Oh, so sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. Just whenever.
No, you're fine. You're fine. Go ahead.
Okay. I just wanted to say that we're working toward the end of wrapping up an adverse childhood experiences toolkit that communities and coalitions can use to prevent and mitigate adverse childhood experiences. So we're super excited to have that coming out. It'll be by the end of next month. So everybody be on the lookout for that.
Would you see, our next meeting is, Sherry, is what, August 6th? Would you be willing to talk and share about that at our next meeting?
Yes, I would love that. Thank you.
Okay, Sherry, if you'll...
I'm sorry?
What, Sherry?
I'm sorry. Who's going to be meeting? Is this Kimberly still?
It is Kimberly Ladd, yes. Uh-huh.
Thank you.
I'll write down to present that toolkit on August 6th.
Yes, that would be awesome. Sherry, just make sure that hits the agenda for me, please.
Will do.
There are membership forms that need to be filled out by all members. And I'm going to confess that they're probably in my mailbox, but I need to know who sent them to me. Kirby, would you have sent the membership forms?
I have them, and we've had 13 so far. Okay. And I sent them also to Kirby. I was hoping you would remind everybody that we have more than 13 participants, and if they have not filled one out, they need to. And I know a lot of people say, well, I've been a member for years, but this is a new form.
So, Sherry, you gonna fill mine out for me?
Yours is already completed and submitted, Miss Debbie.
Thank you.
Yeah, can Debbie, you, I'm glad you're a member of Fusion 5.
Can you email us the form and or let us know if we filled one out or not, because we may not remember?
I absolutely will. It's I'll do it right after the meeting.
I am
Thank
so
you. That's
glad
awesome.
To hear somebody say that besides me.
Thanks, Sherry.
Hey, listen, working from home, I am not complaining, but, you know, part of it is you don't have a lot of change and the days run together and you really do forget what you've done and what you've not done.
Yeah. And you think you've looked at an email and you responded and then come find out, whoops, guess what? I didn't do that.
Or you responded.
You are exactly right.
So I'm glad to hear other people have the same issues that I am.
Yeah, and I appreciate everybody's understanding.
Uh-huh. All right.
And, Debbie, that's okay. That's okay. That's why you have the planning staff to keep you on track.
Hey, listen, and they do. And I'm appreciative of it. Oh, heavens. All right. Is there anything else from anyone?
Hey, this is Jen Talbert with Spiro Health, and I just wanted to say I am very thankful for the ROPES program, Project Lifeliners, faith-based coordinators, and we are extra concerned about our patients relapsing during these challenging times. So we have coordinated with the ROPES across Tennessee to get our patients, families, their friends on the online Narcan training. So I'm just very appreciative for that program and giving that program a shout out. They're awesome.
Great. Thank you. Oh, there is one other. We're doing a pilot with actually the pilot is being done between the Department of Health and the Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse. And we're a part of that. It's specifically for Rutherford County. the department, and it's an expansion of the Navigator program, but with designated staff in Rutherford County, where we're going to look at trying to initiate the buprenorphine there with the appropriate referrals. And I think I got a message from Jessica yesterday telling me that they had hired the nurse practitioner and wanted to know where I was with the Navigator. So we're fixing to up the program out of Rutherford County where the Navigators and the overdoses is concerned. And, you know, I have to tell you, this is one of the things that that has been a big change in my 37 years of watching the state do. It started with the Department of Corrections. When the Department of Corrections said, our guys need treatment, but we don't need to recreate the wheel. So they gave money to the department to provide treatment for their criminal offenders. That was a great thing. And this is another one. The Department of Health was going to put Navigators in the hospitals to address overdose, and they realized that the Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse was already doing that. So they then partnered with them, and that collaboration between departments is quite honestly a breath of fresh air, because that means they're talking and they're learning what each other's doing. And they're trying to build off of that. And I just think that's awesome. It puts for a more unified system across the state, I believe. All right. If there is nothing else to be discussed, I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second. Is there a second?
This is Marianne. I second.
And I use the amber saying, vote with your feet. But in this time, vote with your finger and click your phone off.
All right. Bye, everybody.